Thank you, Blessing Zulu and Jonga Kandemiri. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7, coming to you live from the Voice of America on Tuesday, April 8th, 2014. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Sandra Nyaira.
And I'm Chris Gande.
Studio 7 is going out to Zimbabwe on 909 medium wave and on 4930, 5940 and 15455 short frequencies.
On the internet, find us at www.studio7news.com. Text us at 001-202-465-0318. Here are our top stories this evening.
Information Minister Jonathan Moyo criticizes the recent arrest of journalists from the Daily News, saying police and politicians are abusing their authorities.
He has been a breath of fresh air, and he has been outstanding where most of his cabinet colleagues are identified with integrity, ineptitude, and corruption.
Teachers say they will defy a government directive banning them from conducting holiday and extra lessons for pupils, saying low pay forces them to do so.
We want to condemn that instruction as wrongly informed, because it seems to be informed by the ideology of money, which is speaking to say teachers are making money out of the system.
And Operation Hope brings life-changing surgical operations to Zimbabwe.
Information Minister Jonathan Moyo has criticized the recent arrest of journalists from the Daily News, saying police and politicians are abusing their authorities. Following the arrest Monday of Daily News group editor Stanley Gama and senior writer Fungai Kwaramba on criminal defamation charges, Moyo said such charges were outdated and incompatible with the values and ideals of the liberation struggle, as well as in violation of the Constitution. Moyo's remarks, while welcomed by media groups such as Mr. Zimbabwe, are also regarded with caution, given that Moyo crafted such laws such as the Access to Information and Protection of Privacy Act, AIPA, and Public Order and Security Act, POSA, which greatly curtail media freedom in the country. Kwaramba and Gama were released soon after questioning. Gama told Studio 7 that he welcomes Moyo's statement on the media.
There was understanding with some trepidation within the independent media circles when we came back to the country. Need of information following Zanu-PF victory in last year's election. But I mean, to be honest, and notwithstanding this ugly history, he has been a breath of fresh air, and he has been outstanding where most of his cabinet colleagues are identified with mediocrity, ineptitude, and corruption. I mean, he has been with the media. He's not choosing both the independent and the state media. He's just saying all of us are in the media, all of us are in national newspapers. So this really is a step in the right direction. The minister made it clear that the abuse of the justice system to unnecessarily harass journalists is a crime. Belongs to Stone Age politics. So we really appreciate the minister's comment and support towards the media freedom and diversity.
Now, going back to your case, what has happened? What is going to happen in the near future?
We don't know really in the dark about what is going to happen. But what I can tell you is that we went to the police, we charged criminal defamation. Obviously, criminal defamation is now unconditional in the Constitution. It recognizes the rights of journalists and the press freedom. So what we are basically saying is that they want the politicians and the world connected. They just abuse this law.
The Daily News Group editor Stanley Gama speaking on the line with Studio 7 from Harare.
Mr. Zimbabwe Director Nhlanhla Ngwenya says the media fraternity, while welcoming Moyo's statement, wants to see action on the ground with the government repealing or striking off the statute books, laws that hinder journalists from doing their work.
Journalism is an expression of freedom of expression. It is through journalists that Zimbabweans can be informed of what's happening and what's prevailing around them. It is through journalists that Zimbabweans can access information, some of which is held by public bodies and it is difficult to access as an ordinary citizen. And we should also note that the struggle for the protection of freedom of expression and the promotion of that liberty is not only for journalists. The ultimate beneficiaries of that advocacy and lobby work around those issues are Zimbabweans themselves, simply because media is simply a vehicle through which you express yourself and through which you access information. So journalists are not doing this for themselves, but for the public good, the generality of Zimbabweans, so they can be able to access information without undue hindrances. So basically, what journalists are crying for is not only to exclusively look at themselves and create a comfort zone for themselves, but it is to ensure that they do their work without unnecessary hindrances and disturbances like we saw yesterday.
Mr. Zimbabwe Director Nhlanhla Ngwenya in Harare.
Teachers say they will defy a government directive banning them from conducting holiday and extra lessons for pupils, saying they are struggling living from hand to mouth due to low pay. Members of the Militant Progressive Teachers Union of Zimbabwe say the directive will cause serious friction between teachers and the Minister of Education. Teachers say additional lessons are necessary to prepare school children for public examinations, while the government argues that they are deliberately relaxing during the school term in order to get extra money from parents. Teachers earn between $1 and $5 per child per week for the lessons. The state-controlled media quoted Education Minister Lazarus Dokora as saying teachers who will defy the directive will be dismissed. He was not available for comment today as his mobile phone went unanswered. Reacting to the directive, Sifiso Ndlovu of the Zimbabwe Teachers Association tells Studio 7 his union will engage the Minister of Education on the issue.
Before I didn't talk about defiance, we want to condemn that instruction as wrongly informed, because it seems to be informed by the ideology of man, which is speaking to say teachers are making money out of extra lesson. Yes, if they were some, then that means that was a wrong action and cause. But by and large, teachers are driven by the desire to have succeeding students and passing students at their O level or any terminal examination, since our curriculum is examination driven. And we are now saying to the minister, we must look for other reasons, not the money one. But we are giving them the reason that the teaching quota in the country does not have all qualified teachers in mathematics as required. And so we find that in mathematics or in science or in vocational training subjects or account, for example, these teachers are in deficit. And we are saying now let's have those special teachers who are in other schools putting together the children and then making the way forward and letting our students to pass. And in that way, it has been working.
But do you think these extra lessons are helpful in any way?
The world over provides extra lessons. I think if you are trained to be examination-oriented at your country, because currently the mandate of successful Zimbabwe is by passing public examination, not by acquiring skills. And because if you need to acquire skills, you see sometimes that those skills are not put in good use, or they are not even recognized by the industry that must absorb you. So we want to believe then, as long as we continue to be driven by examination thinking, then children must pass examination in order for them to be recognized for further education and further training.
And that was Sifiso Ndlovu, Chief Executive of the Zimbabwe Teachers Association, speaking with Studio 7's Gibbs Dube from Harare.
Labor Minister Nicholas Goche today met with representatives of the concerned affiliates of the Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Union, which brings together disgruntled members of the umbrella union body in the country, the ZCTU. Former ZCTU President Love Momatombo says the meeting focused on issues affecting ordinary workers, in particular the need for them to get better salaries linked to what they produce, better known as productivity indexing. The meeting, according to Matombo, also looked at labor law reforms and International Labor Organization or ILO recommendations that Zimbabwe is yet to adopt. These include improving workers' rights and aligning the country's labor policies to international labor laws and practices. Matombo tells reporter Jonga Kandemiri, Minister Goche told his team he would do his best to ensure Harare adopts the ILO recommendations and push for other changes needed to improve the ordinary worker's life.
According to his opinion, the labor law reform is yet to be finalized, and that ourselves as a bona fide labor movement, we will be invited to make input to the labor law reform. But we also indicated to him that he should be mindful of the fact that the Labor Act itself was known to be non-compliant with the ILO conventions, and these have been the issues put across to government from time to time. But what we seem to hear from the employers is that the Labor Act is more in favor of the employees, something that is completely different. And we appear to be agreeing on that. We also discussed about the productivity indexing that the employers are talking about. And what we are saying is that if we have to talk about any productivity indexing method, there are technical issues involved. So what we were saying to the minister is that perhaps we need to come together and discuss about how we can come up with a functioning productivity center, which is, of course, under the Ministry of Labor.
What did the minister say to all of these concerns?
He was very much in agreement. He was very much in agreement saying that, yes, we need to revive the productivity center. And that's exactly the way to go as a nation if we are to examine all issues relating to productivity. You know, once we do that, each industry can aggregate the time which is being spent at work against what is being produced. But we are also saying, as we do so,
that was Love Momatombo, leader of the concerned affiliates of the ZCTU, on the line from Harare with Studio 7 reporter Jonga Kandemiri.
You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
We are broadcasting on 909 medium wave and on 4930, 5940 and 15455 shortwave frequencies.
On the internet, find us at www.studio7news.com. Text us at 001-202-465-0318.
Coming up,
Operation Hope brings smiles to many through life-changing surgical operations.
Oh, but first, a look at regional and international news.
Oscar Pistorius broke down and cried on the witness stand today as he described the moment he realized he had fatally shot his girlfriend, Reeva Steenkamp. The South African runner, testifying for a second day in his murder trial, said he initially thought an intruder was in his Pretoria home when he fired a shot through a locked bathroom door. Several people in the audience wiped their eyes as Pistorius recounted the events leading up to Steenkamp's shooting. After an adjournment, the judge cancelled testimony for the rest of the day.
Search crews in the southern Indian Ocean are urgently trying to relocate electronic transmissions they believe came from the missing Malaysian airliner's black box. No signals have been heard since Sunday, when U.S. Navy equipment detected two distinct sounds consistent with acoustic pings from the plane's flight data and cockpit voice recorders. Australian Search Chief Angus Houston said at a news conference today that without more pings, authorities are unable to deploy a robot to search the ocean floor for wreckage. Houston said the search for underwater signals will likely take several days. Authorities are running out of time since the batteries on the black box's locator beacon are built to last for around 30 days. The plane disappeared 1 month ago today.
The International Monetary Fund says the global economic recovery is strengthening. IMF Economic Counselor Olivia Blanchard said Tuesday the Washington-based agency is projecting that the world economy will advance 3.6% this year, up from 3% last year. He said it will increase again in 2015, moving ahead 3.9%. Blanchard said that the recovery from the depths of the world downturn in 2008 is not only stronger but also broader. He said that government austerity measures aimed at cutting national debt levels are being eased and investors are less worried about the possibility of government default. Blanchard said the world banks are gradually becoming stronger.
The 60 people in the country will this week receive life-changing surgical operations and care at the Harare Hospital, offered by United States-based doctors seeking to bring smiles to the lives of many in the developing world. Operation of Hope, which is working with the Rotary Foundations of Avondale and Boredo Brook, provides the free operations through top volunteer doctors from the U.S. Recipients were chosen through a strict screening process, but many other deserving patients were left out due to the huge numbers of people in need, says Operation of Hope President Jennifer Trobenbach.
We are providing at least 45 to maybe 50 free facial reconstructive surgeries for children and adults that live in Zimbabwe, and mostly cleft palate and cleft lip. So anyone with a cleft condition, we're able to perform a free surgery.
How many doctors did you bring for this mission?
Our team is 19 people, so four surgeons and about six nurses, and some non-medical people, as well as someone that helps us with photography. So there's 19 of us all together.
How did you get involved in this project?
Our organization, our foundation, is 25 years old, but in 2006, we were the first invited facial reconstructive team into Zimbabwe. There's only two pediatric surgeons in the whole country, and no one at this time, at the present time, has been trained to do the operation. So we came to Zimbabwe in 2006, and at that time we were turning away about 50 babies a day. So in order to really help the children that suffer from this, we've come twice a year for the last few years, and now that we've helped so many children, over 720 or so, we now come once a year.
Explain to us what cleft palate is. How does a parent know that their child has cleft palate?
A child can be born with a cleft lip, which is a split lip, or a cleft palate, which is a hole in the roof of the mouth. So when the baby's being formed in the mother's womb, the genetics basically face the form completely. So the mother would know, even at birth, if her child suffered from either of these. Just by looking, she could see that there was a problem with the lip, or looking in the mouth, she could see that there was a hole at the roof of the mouth.
Where exactly are you performing these operations?
We're at Harare Central Children's Hospital, right in Harare. So it's a government hospital that has opened their doors and allows us to use two of their operating rooms.
That was Operation of Hope President Jennifer Trobenbach speaking to Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanganyahuye from Harare.
There's a growing chorus of criticism from prominent South Africans aimed at President Jacob Zuma. The criticism stems from the more than $20 million in renovations made to one of his homes. Delia Robertson is an independent South African analyst and historian. From Johannesburg, she spoke to VOA's Joe De Capua about the scandal, beginning with the media attention being given the story.
Next month, South Africa has its general election, and this is the 20th anniversary year of South Africa's commencement as a fully democratic country. So it's a major year, and in this year, people, I think, want to look back with a sense of hope about what the last 20 years have brought and how this points towards the future. But everything is being overshadowed by the scandal of President Zuma's home in which some $25 million US dollars of government money has been spent on his personal home, which public protector says he and his family have benefited unfairly from.
Give us one or two examples of the improvements that critics say are just a bit over the top.
There is, of course, the famous fire pool, which is actually an extremely luxurious and expensive swimming pool that was justified on the grounds that it might be needed in the event that there was a fire at the homestead, which is a whole cluster of buildings and homes. It's not just one building. Another thing is he has a cattle kraal that was built. He has a special culvert that was built underneath the road so that his cattle could go out to graze. He has a visitor center, which he says he needs because of important visitors who come and visit him. However, the state owns houses in Pretoria, in Durban, in Cape Town that are at the disposal of the president. So the suggestion that he needs all of these things to entertain international visitors and dignitaries is a bit moot for some.
The growing criticism of President Zuma includes the voices of some prominent people in South Africa, including those heavily involved in the struggle against apartheid. Can you tell us about some of those people who are now speaking out?
There is a whole handful of them. The latest person to speak out in an op-ed piece in the Business Day newspaper is Mbusa Msimang. He is currently the CEO of the Oliver and Adelaide Tambo Foundation. He's a veteran of Umkhonto weSizwe, which is the armed wing of the African National Congress. He's been a senior official in the government. And his family has a long, long history within the African National Congress. Incidentally, his daughter recently wrote for an online publication a very moving piece about why she would not be voting for the ANC in this coming election. Others include Trevor Manuel, former finance minister. Others include Marion Spark, who was a member of Umkhonto weSizwe, the armed wing, who was jailed for her anti-apartheid activities and tortured by the government. She wrote an open letter to President Zuma saying, "Dear Comrade Jay-Z, please, to preserve your reputation and your dignity, step down now."
Delio, with all this criticism coming at Mr. Zuma, has there been any response from either him or the ANC?
This week there were two things. From Mr. Zuma, he was supposed to report to Parliament on the Public Protector's report about his homestead. And instead what he did was send the report to Parliament and say, "I'm not going to report until an investigation that I have ordered has been concluded," basically circumventing his responsibility to report to Parliament. And he also said earlier this week that he will not repay any money as recommended by the Public Protector. And then the ANC, in the face of all these criticisms, has attacked the people who have made the criticisms, calling them free agents and people who are lost and don't know what they're doing, and a whole range of unpleasant commentary.
Now, is this a crisis of government or a crisis of the ANC?
At the moment, it's a crisis of the ANC. It could indeed become a crisis of government because the criticism and the demands of the South African public are not going to go away. The result of the election might reflect very badly on the ANC. They could come back to Parliament with a significantly reduced majority.
That was Delia Roberts, an independent South African analyst and historian from Johannesburg. She spoke to VOA's Joe Dikapwam.
Coming up, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In late March, as part of the U.S. government's drive toward gender equality and global elimination of gender-based violence, or GBV, the Department of State, working through its Bureau for Democracy, Human Rights, and Labor, introduced the Gender-Based Violence Emergency Response and Protection Initiative. This program aims to provide immediate financial assistance for survivors of severe gender-based violence, as well as for those who find themselves under threat of imminent attack due to their gender or gender identity. This is a first-of-its-kind global program dedicated to aiding survivors of extreme forms of gender-based violence everywhere. The network will be funded by the State Department and run by a consortium of non-governmental organizations. Those organizations include Vital Voices Global Partnership, ProMundo U.S., the International Organization for Migration, and the American Bar Association Rule of Law Initiative. The new Gender-Based Violence Emergency and Protection Initiative builds on and complements past U.S. efforts to eliminate gender-based violence, said U.S. Deputy Secretary Robert Burns. It has three clear objectives. First, survivors of gender-based violence will help receive urgent support, like immediate medical help, emergency shelter, psychosocial support, and legal assistance. Second, the program will provide targeted training for governments and civil society on GBV-related laws and advocacy. These trainings support men and women working to put an end to gender-based violence. And finally, all partners in the initiative will work to develop a regional and international network of service providers and activists in 11 country hubs. From Mexico to Mali and Tajikistan to Thailand, these networks will share data, lessons learned, and best practices, coordinate emergency responses, and work together on shared advocacy efforts, said Deputy Secretary Burns.
Gender-based violence is an inexcusable crime and an affront to dignity and human rights. It robs people, disproportionately women and girls, of their potential and threatens their mental, physical, and reproductive health. It denies economic opportunity and undermines economic growth. And it imperils the safety and stability of communities and of countries.
To make a lasting impact, he said, we need to match the scope of this challenge with the intensity of our response. It will require each and every one of us to stay focused, to continue to marry words with deeds, and to never be content with cheering from the sidelines when we can join the global effort to end the epidemic of gender-based violence once and for all.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
And in sports news, the new Zimbabwe Football Association administration met with Sports Minister Andrew Langer yesterday to discuss Zifa's perennial financial problems and map the way forward as they seek to build a stronger national soccer team. Zifa, which is saddled by debts amounting to over $6 million, told the minister it will venture into various income-generating projects to pay off creditors. Marvelous Mtlanganyawuye spoke with Zifa spokesman Xolani Gwesela earlier on about the meeting and related issues.
Our new board, led by Dr. Cuthbert Dube, met the Minister of Sports, Arts and Culture, Honorable Andrew Langer, together with his deputy, Thabet Kanengoni Malinga. It was a very fruitful meeting where Zifa showed its dedication and commitment to develop and grow football for the next 4 years. Issues that were discussed, the issue of our new headquarters that we want to build a railway, that we got a grant of $500,000 from FIFA, but we're waiting for land to build this headquarters. And the minister said he speak to his counterpart from the Minister of Lands so that we secure land to build the headquarters. The board also showed commitment that they would grow football for the next 4 years by organizing football competitions, by organizing women competitions, by organizing youth competitions. The board also showed its dedication to ensure that they successfully host this year the Football Association or FA Cup. And the board showed confidence that they will be able to grow and develop football for the next 4 years.
What commitment did you get from the sports ministry in terms of actually assisting Zifa to make sure that you become viable, seeing as you're very indebted at the moment with a debt of over $6 million?
As we are aware, that government has always been helping us, and the creation of this separate sports ministry is a product of lobbying from the Zifa board president, Mr. Cuthbert Dube.
That was Zifa spokesman Xolani Gwesela speaking with Studio 7's Marvelous Mtlanganyawuye from Harare. That's all we had for you tonight. Please stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when we will discuss the government's directive banning extra or holiday lessons. We leave you now with Sitandikile Mhlanga and probably Chris Gande. This is Sandra.